Welcome to This Just In, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome to This Just In. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. In these segments, I'll bring you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. As always, we're broadcasting from the This Just In studios on the Business Radio X Network, as well as the Healthcare Now Radio Network. For this episode, my 233rd episode, with a very special first-time guest, Kami Olberg, Product Manager from Cure4U Health. Welcome to the show, Kami.
Hi, everyone. How are you? Thanks for having me, Justin. I appreciate it.
You got it. This show has actually been in the making for a while. My great producer, Roberta Moen, had just brought up that we should do a best practice series on digital health, virtual care, and just really how the industry is evolving. And to be honest, the very first person I thought of was you.
Me?
You. Because you, and as you can probably tell, Kami's in studio with me today. You are on the front lines, I say navigating, but at times battling, you know, this whole country's adoption of digital health. And to be honest, you are doing it on site, you know, inside the product with these clinicians, with these front desk staff, front office managers, organizations, large and small. I mean, the smallest to the largest in the country, the most progressive. So you have the most amazing knowledge just in view of exactly where this country is today, certainly with the leaders that are doing this.
Absolutely.
And the finger on the pulse.
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah, so I am extremely excited about this show. But before we dive in to all the different best practices and thoughts and strategies and ideas, you are a first-time guest. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where'd you grow up? College? Just give a good picture of yourself here.
Yeah, so I grew up in North Texas, so in the suburbs of Dallas, I'll say. Small town called Lewisville, which is in North Texas, Denton area. I went to college at University of North Texas. I then moved to San Antonio for a short period of time. So my later years of college, I went to University of Texas at San Antonio. Spent a few years there as well and kind of just bounced around a little bit. And then I eventually landed here in Florida for Cure4U's headquarters.
Yep.
So now I work here and I love it. Texas is my home, but Florida is definitely not a second, what do you want to say? It's not
second fiddle.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Thank you. So super excited. So yeah.
Yeah, and you actually come from, and we don't ever do this, but you really wanted to come work with Cure4U from one of our customers. I mean, it was, and the customers, and you worked very closely with them, and they approved it, and they loved it, and it had all been fantastic. But you actually came from using the application. It was sold to you, and then you actually implemented it at your practice in Texas, which is still an amazing customer of ours and actually doing really big things, really innovative things, which is extremely exciting. But you were a user of the product and then you liked it so much and you saw the vision. And so you came and so tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah. So I was actually on the project team for implementing Cure4U at the practice that I was working for at the time. We were an 18 provider practice, 18 locations. And so we were tasked to go and implement Cure4U from a digital check-in perspective, procedure care management, scheduling, telehealth, messaging, every piece that Cure4U practically offers, we were there. So
no RPM yet back then? No.
RPM. With procedure care, we did RPM, which is a little bit different, but it's still tracking the patient from home remotely.
Yep.
So
awesome.
We did absolutely do that part as well. As I was transitioning outside of that role, Cure4U was one of my biggest passions. I loved it. I had an opportunity between two different career paths, and I absolutely chose Cure4U, and I don't regret it to this day because I love making an impact to our customers and to patients, to be honest.
Yeah.
That's one of my biggest passions, so super excited.
Yeah, so let's dive in. Because there's a lot of people getting into digital health and we all have our reasons and stories, but you know, tell us about your passion, either for joining Cure4U and or you know, just for customer success and innovation in general.
Yeah. So I actually started with Cure4U or just virtual care, right? Mm-hmm. And talking about implementation. So I got a chance to work with project leaders like myself when I was at the practice And I really, really enjoyed that piece. But then I transitioned into the customer success side. Once the customer is live and utilizing the virtual care, talking about the strategies, that's one of my favorite pieces, is being able to really hone in on some of the barriers or pain points that a customer may have and becoming strategic and trying to find out what workflow works best. Not every practice is alike. Mm-hmm. So you really have to be personal. One of my biggest things about being passionate about with customers is probably having a personal relationship with the customer.
That's excellent.
And really just getting to know them and them becoming a person that's really trusted, or that they can trust in me. I'm a trusted advisor for them. Yeah. So that's probably my biggest passion, is just solving problems and just becoming strategic and getting creative with solutions. So,
well, those are almost all best practices for success in general. So great job. I mean, that's a great perspective. And you and I have never actually spent a lot of time together. So getting to know even your passion is awesome for me. But I mean, how you hone in on, you know, aligning, making sure that we are aligned with the customer's vision, where they want to go, and then, you know, digging in deep with them, becoming their close friend, trusted advisor, best friend, therapist probably at times, because we're navigating a lot.
This is very true.
Yeah. So, you know, I see that even from my perspective of how, you know, we're helping them. We're doing big things. I mean, we're solving world problems, and that's a task every single day. It's a lot of work. And so by befriending, you know, befriending your customers, your partners, it makes the day a lot better. And again, they are going to trust you more because they know your heart.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And so getting to know them, that's awesome. And I'm sure we'll have some time, because I always like to add some fun, and I want to hear about some other fun times we've had with customers. But also, my audience, you know, 90% of my show is focused on just best practices and key strategies to success. So let's sprinkle in a couple of those now. Okay. And again, I know you have a lot of perspective, but these are big questions, and you know, tackling a mega billion dollar, multi-trillion dollar industry actually, because we're growing very well, but. What are, in your experience, two or three best practices that you would share with my audience on how to achieve success in navigating virtual care in general? And we just covered a couple at a high level, but what would you add on to that or thoughts there?
I would absolutely say this is probably one of the things that I've learned along the way. So I've been doing this for 3 years, but I'll say five when I'm talking about implementing a virtual solution. But probably the number one thing, when I first start working with a customer, I really drive the message home that you have to have your end users, which is your practice users as well, really buy in. So the buy-in is important. And how do you get the buy-in is really making sure that you empower your users and your staff to know and be able to say, hey, you know, I really want to make some adjustments, or this isn't working for our patients, or hey, this is really great. Can we, you know, enhance this piece? Listening to the feedback from the users and from the staff is so important, because when they feel empowered, and that's just from my own personal experience, is when I'm implementing this project or this product to an organization, I hear the pain points of a user, and I try to solve that problem. When they feel like, oh, somebody's listening, somebody's hearing me, even at the implementation phase, or even when it's talking about, you know, really implementing it into that specific location or that practice, listening to the users is really important for them to feel like they can, you know, bring feedback and improve the process, right? So I feel like that's really successful. What brings success to them is that they feel empowered. And then, of course, your patients. Your patients are your customers,
right?
At a practice. And so also listening to the patient, right? Making sure that you understand their feedback and really communicating really well with them, letting them know what this will do and how it'll enhance their experience as well. So that's really important for their success. So that's
excellent. Great advice.
Okay. Yeah.
So, again, leveraging your experience, what are a few best practices for organizations to optimize their digital front door and consumerism strategy? Because you had to do that from a hands-on approach. So what are some thoughts there you would share?
I would say for the best practices, really just, I think one of the things that we run into is sometimes we implement, when we implement our EHRs, right, or EMRs, whatever you want to call them, we find ourselves sitting there with that information for years. And then when you start implementing virtual products and things like that, it really makes you force you to look at the things that you have in place and really, what do you want to say? Sorry, I'm trying to think of the word. It forces you to focus on that piece so that you can look and make adjustments and changes, again, for the patient's experience. Because you may find that, oh my gosh, we're, you know, asking 400 questions. I'm not saying that's an exaggeration, but we're asking 100 questions to our patients that don't make sense to ask this patient population.
That's right.
So it forces you to really rethink your whole strategy on how you communicate and how you, you know, engage with your patients. So
actually, and I'll do a follow-up here in a second, but that brings up a great point because, you know, I've gone into to practices and they literally ask me 85 questions.
Yeah. Or,
and when now with, you know, you bring in your digital health platform, you know, Cure for You in this example, you know, you might be able to streamline that down to 30 or 20 and really rethink this process. Because also it's kind of funny when you start talking to them, one doctor layers on this, a nurse layers on this, and that's how you get to 85 or 100 questions or more in some cases. I've seen 120 actually at times. It's like, well, you can't ask that patient that many questions. Oh my gosh. And so to your point is really making them rethink. But anything else that you could add on to having a good consumerism strategy?
Yeah, I think one of the things too is that just to remind, you know, customers, of course, we're here for the customer and we're their advocate at some points, right? But we also want to make sure that the customer has, they trust in us a little bit, right? Because we've been doing this for so long, we've been in this business for quite some time, it's important to listen to feedback from, you know, the vendor as well, just so they understand and they can see, hey, we've been doing this for quite some time. I know the path that you're going may run into a more difficult one for the patient, right? Not saying you have to absolutely adopt what we're saying that you have to do or, you know, from a virtual care perspective, but it's important just to kind of listen. You know, sometimes sometimes it comes back and it's like, okay, let's change it. You know, we'll never force and never push.
Yeah.
We'll absolutely go with what the customer, you know, is adamant about doing. And then we'll shift and adjust and be agile as much as possible. Because at the end of the day, we just want to make the patient's experience the best.
Yeah, let's take a second on that because that's a really good point. I have never heard that one on my show before. Nor even in my think tanks, I've ever heard that. It's actually the vendor, you know, your, I call your partner, your digital health partner, your vendor, has maybe done this 200, 300, 400, 500 times.
Absolutely.
And so they're going to have some best practices. And to be honest, other like Epic, I mean, there are EHRs out there. I don't like to usually call out, you know, people specifically, but Epic does a really good job. Epic has best practices and they might force it on you like, you know, we don't do that, but they have best practices that you should follow and could follow to have great success. So I think your point's spot on is, you know, we've already done this, you know, 500 times. Here are a few things that may be able to streamline for your practice, streamline this for your patients, give you a much better patient experience, give you much better consumerism experience, which is what they're doing this whole digital front door for.
Well, what's important here, I feel like, is that the suggestions that we may provide or someone, partner may provide to you, didn't come from our heads.
Right.
It came from history with working with other customers that have also ran into the same scenario and said, hey, we worked together and we provided solutions together found that this solution was typically going to be the best one to use. And then we want to pass along that information. It's not that we have the knowledge that it's coming from us as the partner. It's coming from you specifically.
Right.
Actually, it's coming from the customer.
That's great.
Saying, hey, you know, I found that working with specific customers like you, this particular situation, this is the solution that we provided and it worked the best.
That's
so,
excellent.
You know, learning from trial and error.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And for those just tuning in, we're speaking with Kami Oberg, product manager from Cure for You. So share some of your thoughts specifically. Let's dive into RPM. It's obviously one of the hottest topics, fastest growing, you know, markets, strategies in the country, and it's not going to slow down. It gets bigger every day, to be honest. So what are some of the best practices that you would share for a healthcare organization to optimize their RPM or even procedural care strategy like you brought up earlier?
Sure. So with remote patient monitoring, it as we talk about this all the time, right? Yep. Because it is the hottest topic that we're talking about. We talk with customers, I feel like, 15 times a day
exactly.
about remote patient monitoring. And it always comes down to the same suggestions. Mm-hmm. It's always coming down to the same recommendations, right? Where we say, start small. Let's find out what the patient population is. Who are we targeting first?
Right.
Are we looking at targeting those that have chronic conditions with blood pressure? Are we focusing on diabetes? What conditions are we focusing on first? Understanding our patient population. What age are we looking at? Because that's the beauty of remote patient monitoring, because you can target specific populations.
Yes.
You can say, I want to work with, you know, patients that are between 30 and 40 with diabetes, because you know that maybe they will be the best to adopt at first.
Right.
We'll learn and have better feedback from this group of population, not specifically saying that that is the group, but just for example, we may learn best feedback from this specific population, because at the end of the day, The practice knows who their population is best.
Yeah.
We can go and give suggestions all day long, but if, say, for instance, you're in a rural area and you find that 50 to 60 is best, whatever it may be, but I would suggest starting small, find out who your panel is, and then from there, really working with those patients, letting those patients know, hey, I'd really like you to be on this program because I really want to work
for
with
them.
You. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And understand what the feedback is, because we want to know how it is impacting the patient, right? And then, of course, your follow-up. What's important for the practice is to have plans in place for those patients. That's why we want to start small, right? Because we want to put the SOPs, the standard operating procedures. We want to put the follow-ups. What are we going to do? How is the provider going to react if the patient's out of range? There are very important steps for remote patient monitoring. So you want to just make sure that you have your plan in place.
Yeah.
So starting small is really important.
That's excellent. And also one of the ones that you brought up to me before we come in the studio here is, to the best of your ability, have those devices integrated into your platform.
Absolutely.
You cannot have any manual entry. And to be honest, you even want to avoid Wi-Fi if you can. I mean, most of the ones that you work with, I know you, from your company specifically, is about, you know, that everything's cellular. So the patient puts on a device, it automatically gets fed up. Even if it's on, you know, a FirstNet network, even in a remote area, you still can do that in a secure fashion. And that way, all this data gets fed into the platform.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, available almost instantaneously. And so that's a best practice to, you know, avoid Wi-Fi where you can, have devices fully integrated into platforms. And again, Wi-Fi works, but there's so many issues with Bluetooth and Wi-Fi that, you know, through the years of doing this and the tens and tens of thousands of patients and devices working, you know, working with different devices, we've, you know, I know that one of them you mentioned to me was that opportunity.
I mean, you want to make sure that you have accessibility to all your patient population in the entire nation. Like, you don't want to target just those that are in a city that have access to these specific areas that are better in Wi-Fi, whatever it may be, right? You want to be able to be agile. So you're absolutely right. Same thing with the integration, and I'm glad you brought that up, is because not only do we want to have the device to be able to be integrated, but we want to be able to integrate into the EHR or the EMR, whichever you want to call it, so that that data feeds directly in there, so that the provider has a one-stop shop. The provider can review and be able to adjust medications or provide feedback or make sure that you rest 5 minutes now and do another test, whatever it may be, to be able to communicate back and forth with the patient and be all throughout the EMRs is really key.
Yep. Excellent. And that's one of the best practices that CureView has done, is they also, you know, the product will integrate into CureView, and CureView is fully integrated into the EHR. And that integrated ecosystem, we've been working so hard at nationally over the last 20 years to have all this interoperability flowing. Well, it is flowing now.
Yep.
But I always like to mention as much as I can, because we want providers and healthcare organizations seeking that integration. It exists out there. Only leaders are doing it. So don't fall trapped to these new little products or, you know, little fly-by-night companies that say, oh, I have an RPM product. No, look for the ones that are all fully integrated, have this full circle of care. That's, again, we've been working on this through standards and interoperability for 20 plus years. Leverage it. It is available out there. Just make sure that you seek it out. So what are a few challenges that you may have experienced over the last year that you've seen out there in the marketplace, and, you know, how can we help people avoid them?
So one of the main things,
or minimize the disability.
I wish we had a magic wand.
Exactly.
We could just fix everything.
I know. That's why I had to fix my comment. Let's minimize the disability.
One of the, probably the things that stick out the most for me is the challenges that we've run through in the last year is really the practice at the practice level. Especially with COVID and everything going on, they're having a lot of trouble with turnover with staff, right? So keeping the staff engaged,
excellent,
keeping the staff employed, making sure that the staff that are new are educated. So that's been one of the challenges that we have come up against. And thankfully, we have a lot of solutions in place for that, right? So we have our training 24/7. Things like that, we want to make sure that we're keeping engaged with the customer. So we are very, very... It's important that when you work with a partner that you have that communication channel that's open so that they can feel that they can come to you at any time and communicate and let you know, hey, we're really struggling in this area because I have 15 new staff members. Can you help me?
Right, which is actually common.
It is very common.
I had no idea how common this was until you actually told me.
Very common. Yes, it's incredibly common. And so that's one of the challenges that we're running into. But like I said, day by day, things are getting a lot better, but we definitely want to make sure that we have those tools in place so that they feel like they can be successful as well.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
And also, one of the other best practices that you offered and just things is we actually, you know, offering patient support. It's, you're one of the only companies, CareView, that actually offers direct patient support.
Oh, yeah.
So for telehealth, RPM, digital front door, apps, there's organizations don't have staff, people on staff to help a patient with an app or how to log into their telehealth, or they're just not staffed for that.
No.
And CareView offers that. And that was one of the best practices that I know that you helped champion and make sure that was implemented from, you know, your time at CareView. So, you know, I applaud that because, again, I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of companies and no one offers that direct patient support for the entire platform. Some may offer little bits and pieces, but yeah.
It's so important. I mean, I feel like, and not to like, you know, make this about CareView for 2.5 seconds, but it's really important and we're super passionate about it. And the reason why is because we do see these patients. And thankfully, what's good about this is we have a downward trend when it comes to support because our product is getting better and better every day so that the patients, it's a seamless experience.
Right.
It's very minimal of how much patient, you know, support that we have to provide, but it's there.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, during COVID, during the telehealth boom, it was insane. I was personally taking patient support calls until 9 o'clock in the evenings.
Yeah.
I was working 12, 15 hour days just so we can make sure that the patients feel like they were supported and that they could successfully get on the call, successfully communicate with their provider. At the end of the day, again, it always comes down to the patient. So we want to make sure that's available for them.
That's awesome. In my closing few minutes here, let's you know, maybe spend 2 minutes or so. What healthcare trends do you expect us to see over the next 12 to 18 months?
I think that now that we're over the I wouldn't say we're over the telehealth boom, but we're at we peaked, right? And we're kind of coming to a more stabilized trend here. I would probably say that remote patient monitoring is absolutely going to kick up.
Yep.
As we go forward with telehealth, as we start providing more remote care to these patients, telehealth and RPM kind of go hand in hand a little bit.
Because
as you are managing the patient, you can engage then with a telehealth call when, you know, a lot of these patients are still very fearful or they find that, oh my gosh, this is so much more convenient.
Yes.
Why else would I go in the, I don't want to go to the practice.
Right.
So I think RPM absolutely will be your upwards trend in the next 12 to 18 months, along with procedure care management, which is, you know, coming right down the pipeline as well. I mean,
spend a second on that because that's a new term for me, but I know it's significant from your background, where you come from in healthcare. So what is procedure care management? Basically is RPM, but for the specialist, more of the specialist. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yeah, it's actually one of the probably the most passionate things I'm about.
Yeah.
I would say the most, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say for procedure care management, what it basically does, it tracks the patients for outcomes. It's typically used with those that are surgeons, or it could be for surgical or non-surgical, just for procedures specifically, so that allows you to track the patient's outcomes for the quality of life. They have a benchmark before the procedure, and then they will then track that patient up, I mean, for years. You could go for every 3 months, up to 12 months, whatever it may be, so that you can see the upward trend, or if you see that it's not progressing in the manner that you want it to, the surgeons or the practice will then shift and adjust their care plans. And they'll say, okay, maybe this particular thing, say for instance, we ask them to drink 8 glasses of water a day. Let's do 10 glasses because we find it's easier, better for the patient for them to heal. They'll be able to adjust their care plan and have better outcomes for the patient. So it's really, it's to improve the patient's care.
That's cool. It's awesome. Yeah. Exciting. So now to more of the fun part of my show, you know, I think best practices are a blast. That's why I do what I do and I love it.
Me too.
But what's the most fun or memorable experience that you've ever had with a customer or in healthcare in general?
To be honest, I think that I have fun with our customers all the time. So now that I'm not so much customer facing, I do a little bit right from the product management perspective so I can get their feedback on certain products. I always get so excited, especially now after COVID, when you get on video, it's so normal to see people. So we really engage. We play with our virtual backgrounds.
Yeah.
Pretend we're on the beach or something like that. It's really fun. But I think one of the coolest things that we have for the future that I'm more excited about is being able to invite our customers here and do a simulation lab and really spend some time with them because we're in Florida. Every customer I talk to always tells me, when do I get to come visit you? Can we tell my boss that Care4U has an event going on? And I'm like, please come. So I really have grown friendships with these people and I really can't wait for them to come down so we can actually spend some time together. But that'll probably be my most memorable, most fun is when they get to come down.
Well, actually, and so I don't think you're too far off. I caught a glimpse. Monica was a guest. The CEO of CareView was a guest last week, and she talked about her experience center that you guys are building in the new office. And so that's going to be a very cool, you know, being able to have that lab and that experience center where people can come in, see the entire flow, the entire platform customized to their specialty or their workflows. But then also I had Josh Stuber on the week before that, and he talked about the user groups that you guys are going to crank up at some of your customer conferences. So, and obviously being in Florida, you know, around the Tampa, Sarasota area is a great place for people to visit. So
why not?
Yeah, very, very cool. So in the last couple seconds here, where do you go or get or be inspired? It's my question I ask everybody.
To be honest, as you mentioned, Monica, our CEO, she definitely absolutely inspires me. She is a woman that empowers other women, and she has definitely provided a lot of mentorship for me. And she's got a lot of belief and trust in me. And she definitely is the one that inspires me to be bigger and better.
That's awesome. Monica, I first met her in the think tank, my think tank a couple years ago, and she is a very inspiring person. So
absolutely.
Very cool. Kami, great to have you on the show today, and thank you for joining me on air.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate
it. Your very first time, but you crushed it.
So, I hope. I was nervous.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
And thanks, everybody, for taking your time out of the busy day to join us. And you can listen to all of our shows weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so I can respond to your comments from the show. If you miss any of this episode or want to hear more of my shows, they're posted on Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and TuneIn. Also, you can check out some of the new content we just posted at justinbarnes.com. Thanks, everyone. Stay safe.